So today's title of the sermon is Let's Not Be Oblivious, but to actually be aware of His historical presence. So one of the beneficial aspects of reading Moses' five books in historical sequence is that we get to actually see where we are in terms of our religious status. So from the beginning of journey of exiting Egypt to the arrival of land of Canaan, the point of the journey that we direct where we direct will tell us what we can learn and what we need to do in order to overcome the hurdles that lies before us during that specific stage of the journey. So many times as a Christian, even though you might be born as a Christian, many times we're lost in terms of our religious life. So at that point when you're lost, it's not like we have a GPS or something like that to guide us into the right direction. Where do we look at? We look to this specific part of the Bible. So basically the journey starting from Mount Sinai, or maybe even before that, from the exiting of from Egypt to going into the land of, to the promised land, the journey to the promised land, that's a very long time. And we get to actually see where we are, and you could see from the Bible, from the words, what we could do to overcome some of the hurdles that we face today. So it is crucial for us to sort of reflect on where we are in terms of our religious journey within the big map, right? And the reason why this is so crucial is because Christianity, it's not really focused on the journey of the past. What I mean by that is our journey is just the beginning after we have escaped from the eternal death. And God expects us to do to accomplish so many things after we have been saved, right? So there's just so much that we need to go through until we join God in heaven. And we need to understand why we need to continue to live on this land, and what is the purpose of being sent to this land, and what is it that we must do and accomplish in this land. Thus, those of us who understand this religious map is much better suited in terms of not getting lost with our religious duties and visions. Now, what do we mean by religious map? Our religious map is the Bible, right? So in order to not get lost, so in order for us to get lost, Satan constantly impedes our serious relationship with the Bible. And how does he deceive and impede? He will try to make us misunderstand the Bible in a way that that will make us feel uncomfortable. What I mean by that is he's going to try to do everything to seem like the words in the Bible doesn't make sense and make you think like, surely this can't be what God is saying, right? But nevertheless, we need to believe that God's words are still true until today, and that they're living, and they're the living words. And you can almost feel that He's even working within us as we receive His grace through the words by having the ability to think deeply about the words. So chapter 4 verse 12 of Hebrews says, nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of Him to whom we must give account. And God revealed to us when we're listening, reading, and meditating on His words. So God reveals about Himself when we listen and read and meditate on His words. And through this revealing, we're able to reflect on ourselves. And John 14 verse 26 says, but the Counselor, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. This verse indicates that we're going to find new and controversial attitudes and thinking that we have never encountered before as we read the Bible. And this kind of struggle or concern is actually a healthy one. It shows that the Word of God has come inside of us and it is transforming us. However, again, the Satan will continue to deceive us by making us misinterpret the words given to us and take these healthy struggles into a wrong way. He will do everything that he can to make us change, not make us changed or transformed, but rather make us perverted by giving us this offensive and unpleasant feelings after encountering the gospel in our hearts. So bless all of you so that you may be changed and not become perverted when you hear the word of gospel and when the Holy Spirit guides you to realize the underlying messages. So as we recall from last week's sermon, we're able to see the Israelites stray away from the land of Canaan because of the whole incident with sending men to explore the land in advance. And this happened right after they arrived, right? And you know, our God always has a plan, and that plan is never, it's not spontaneous or biased or wrong or misdirected. However, we're able to see God punishing his people after they left Mount Sinai. This is because the Israelites are continuing to complain about the things that they desire rather than staying true to God's plan and his words. They should have never sent those people, right? For inspection or to explore the land in advance. They should have just stayed faithful to God's plan. Usually, the complaints come out when we are feeling discomfort, rather than when we are despair. What I mean by that is, it comes out when things are not going as we planned, even though we think that it is fair to ask those things to others, right? So if these people knew that God is some incapable of providing them with, you know, meat as food, then they probably wouldn't have complained. If they knew that God has no power, then they probably have no expectations, or, you know, they wouldn't have complained because they know that he can't do it. But because they knew that God could do those things, they actually complained to him. But because they knew God's power, and what he could do, they were making all these complaints to God when God didn't consent to their desires. You know, God has plans, right? He doesn't have to consent to our desires or to our wants, he doesn't have to sit down and listen to our complaints all the time. He's the God. He makes the plan. It's not us who's asking for, you know, things to come or for what to have as our meal. And this can be seen as a consequence of interpreting the first three commandments according to their own interpretations. And this is going to be the key theme of today's sermon: interpreting the things on their liking, on their desires. So since they were forbidden from worshiping the evil spirits that listen to their desires, they tried to fill those desires and greed from our very own God, from the God himself. However, we need to remind ourselves that our God is not a genie that unconditionally grants wishes just for the sake of it, you know? God doesn't want that kind of magical relationship with us. He wants to have a genuine, intimate human relationship with us which is based on trust. It's not just based on, you know, you rubbing on the lamp, but it's actually based on trust. Therefore, our faith will be dramatically different depending on how we think of our God, how we think of God. And today, so many of us have different interpretations of God, right? But this is a problem. We need to have a correct and proper understanding of God. And that's very, very important, because that goes directly to our faith, to the level of our faith. And really, the best way to understand God and to know God is through his words, through the various events in the Bible. Because in the Bible, through these stories and events, God is revealing parts of himself to us. and specifically the journey from the wilderness to, you know, from Mount Sinai and going through the wilderness and to and arriving at the land of the promised land, we're able to see what we need to do as Christians and what we need to do in order to uphold our faith. However, there's still many misunderstandings that take place today within the church. Many people are working hard by serving the church for the sake of wanting to witness God's miracles, for the sake of, you know, getting something in return. And this is not necessarily a bad thing, but by going down on that road, we're basically asking our God to listen to our desires rather than having us listen to His plans. And of course, our God is more than capable of doing anything that we ask of Him. Anything that we can ask can be done by Him. However, if we think deeply enough on the events that are revealed to us in Numbers, then we can see that God does not work that way. When Jesus came to this earth, many people tried to challenge Him by asking Him to perform various miracles. God, or Jesus, if you're the Son of God, do this and do that. But what did Jesus do? He was like, nah, I didn't come to this earth to gain popularity, you know? Jesus knew that the only thing that he had to prove was the cross. Jesus knew that the only important thing in this world was the death on the cross. And ever since He was born until His death, He bore the cross. Similarly, God was no different back then. And God doesn't work according to what humans desire. So let us remember that, as this is very applicable in our lives. So back then, the statement that read, "Church that treats God's miracle as common sense," that was a statement back then. It was a very popular statement back in the day. And this seemed like a very good statement. And it still is relevant to this day. However, now that we know the words correctly and in a more profound way, this statement is just, you know, a bit misleading. It's very unfortunate. And we're now able to know that it is such a blessing to just live an ordinary life where we can get to follow God's plan rather than having to expect some miracles to be performed by our God. So we don't need the miracles, right? To be happy, to be blessed. It's actually the ordinary life that we get to live in our daily lives to follow Jesus, to follow God's plan. It was actually a very blessing thing. So rather than following the previous statement, it is better to be a church that treats obedience and faithfulness as common sense. In God, the three in one is always with us, always within us. Therefore, let us remember that God, that the God back in Numbers, back in the days of Numbers, is the same God today, and that He is with us all the time. So now it is quite important to examine why these people have complained to God and what God's response was to these complaints. By learning about this, we can correctly and properly live our lives according to His plan. So now moving on. So, as evidenced in chapters 11 to 14, these people were rejected from entering into the land of Canaan, the promised land, because of their stupid complaints. Thus, they had to come back out to the wilderness and had to live there for another 38 years. Now, during this time, the people in their 20s, when they exited Egypt, when they're saved from Egypt, we're all dead. So basically, many years have passed. And so you can see how mere complaints have led to such a waste of resources. These people didn't even get to enjoy the promised land, right? Because of the complaints. So chapter 15 The title will be, you know, checking on our relationship with God. And basically the message here is go back to where you started if you're lost. It's always good to go back to where you started your journey, right? If you're lost. You don't want to take the wrong step and, you know, kind of rewind back a little bit, but then you're still lost and you waste more time. So what you want to do is actually go back to the very beginning. And chapter 15 is really a reiteration of what we have looked at in Leviticus. It is telling us the importance of restoring our relationship with God. Remember that? Does that ring a bell? It is talking to us about that wholesome relationship. So these people have failed miserably in front of God. And God said, oh, you guys made it to the promised land, but I'm just going to reject you because of all your complaints. And the only way for you guys to actually be ready to enter into the land of Canaan is by going back to where you guys came from, which is restoring the relationship with Him. So if something seems strange or wrong or complicated, then we must go back to where we have started. Don't try to fix the problem by merely taking a step back. You need to actually start from the beginning. So through chapter 15, God is basically telling us to do that, to go back by mentioning of the supplementary offerings. In verse 2, God is reminding the Israelites of the fact that He is giving the land of Canaan to them. And He mentions the burnt offerings and Passovers to remind them of these rules and commandments. So remember that burnt offerings were offered to reconcile our relationship with God. God has always led His people based on the foundation of the covenant made to Him. The covenant contained the commandments which enforced these people not to idolize God at their convenience and how they see fit, but rather to develop a humanistic relationship with Him. To develop that intimate relationship with Him. So basically, the restoration of our relationship with Him, mentioned in Leviticus, was the basis of the offering. Now that these Israelites have failed to maintain such relationship with God, by distorting the relationship with Him, by trying to idolize Him in a way, God now wants them to restore that relationship with Him again before entering into the promised land. So now God is basically reminding the Israelites to start over again with the offering because they needed to restore their relationship with God. They had to realize again what God does and who God truly is. And obviously, God believes this to be a very important factor because this can lead to sinful behaviors. For these people to make a complaint every single time, and will find something else to idolize over and worship to fulfill their desires, or worship other things to fulfill their desires, God wanted to eradicate this completely, this sinful root that we have, by taking us to the very beginning, even if that meant, you know, costing another 38 years. So obviously, this religion of Christianity doesn't work according to convenience. And convenience is what, you know, so many people these days seek in every aspect of our lives, right? But this religion is not convenient. It only works according to His will. So through this service, we need to understand God's words properly and truly know who He is. We have been talking about this so many times in the last few months, but note that the Bible is reiterating these points. And from that, we can realize that humans never learn. We tend to understand what's going on, and we'll forget about it when something else happens. The Bible sure records that, and we can acknowledge that that is what's happening in our lives as well. So going back to my point, as we meditate on His words, we need to feel some kind of conflict that's taking place in our lives. That is because We feel like sinners when we meditate on His words properly. We realize that, oh wow, like I've been living with this sinful nature in my heart. And these words seem to be, you know, reflections of what we do in this world. And when we have that conflict, and when we realize that we are sinners, is when we come before Him to repent for our sinful natures and activities. And God doesn't want us to forget about His heart for us. That is why in chapter 15, God gives a command to the Israelites so that they will be able to remind of His heart, of His intention, of His purpose. If you look at verse 37, God makes the people to make tassels on the corners of their garments with the blue cord on each tassel, and tells them that they will look at it and will remember all the commandments of the Lord, so that they may obey Him and not prostitute themselves by going after the lust of their own hearts and eyes. Then they will remember to obey all of His commands and will be consecrated to their God. And basically He tells them that he's their God who brought them out of the Egypt. So you know, like we make wedding rings and stuff like that to remind ourselves of the vows that we take on each other, right? When we're married. So same thing, God allows this, you know, tassel to be, to make tassels on the corners of the garments so that we will be reminded of His grace and of His just awesomeness, right? Because it is pretty obvious that we forget all the time. And so you see how hard God is trying here. Making people to make tassels on their garments means nothing really, if we take away the underlying message behind it. But God is really saying here, since you guys are so bad at remembering things, I will give you guys something to see so that you can be reminded of it. So what is the overarching message here? God wants us to remember His purpose and His intention, and to live as His people while we live in this earth. In other words, He doesn't expect us to do the religious things, but rather to transform our lives as His children as we live each and every day. So since the journey of Mount Sinai and to the wilderness for 40 years, God never asked these people to do something so that they can be saved, but rather He wanted His people to be transformed into a holy figure. Moreover, He is asking us not to interpret His messages and to make Him fit as how we want Him to be, but rather approach to Him with the genuine intention to have an intimate and human relationship with Him. That's the overarching message. And moving on to chapter 16, is about the rebellion of Korah and Dathan. The rebellion has come, you know. Every country always has a good rebellious, story. So same thing happened. We're humans. It doesn't matter about the time. People do things that are very humanistic things. And these group of men became insolent and rose against Moses, pretty much. And with them were 250 Israelites men, well-known community leaders who have been appointed as members of the council. That number, 250, were very significant, and therefore this was a big event. And that's probably the reason why it's recorded in the Bible. It is likely to be predicted that this rebellion took place towards the end of the time at the wilderness. So almost at the end of the 40 years. Thus, it is quite reasonable to think that these people were getting tired of their lives, as many have already died without, you know, being able to enter the promised land. So this Korah guy is a son of Kohath, and he is a descendant of Levites. Really, the explanation for his complaint came from the very fact that his family wasn't given any important roles among the Israelites. And, you know, for the others who joined the rebellion, probably had the similar reasons. So these collaborative tribes got together with their own separate reasons. Furthermore, what pissed them off even more was the very fact that they had been wandering around in the wilderness for over 35 years. And it's not like they were lost on their way to the promised land, right? If it's, you know, humans can make mistakes and we get lost all the time, and no one could really can be blamed for that. But the destination was right in front of their eyes. They literally arrived there, but it's just that they weren't allowed to enter. And during this time, approximately 40 to 50 people died each day. And they were probably scared, right? They probably had low amounts of food, you know. They were getting tired. They didn't have a proper shelter to protect themselves. And remember now, these unfortunate events... But what we need to remember is that these unfortunate events of not, you know, mainly not being able to enter into the promised land happened because of their own faults. Because they weren't faithful to God's plan. But after 30 years have gone by, they have forgotten that. They have completely forgotten that it was their fault that had led them, you know, to their stage, pretty much. And now they're complaining not only on the fact that they're rejected from entering, but also because they weren't given the land to farm and, you know, to harvest vineyards. So these tribes were not just complaining to Moses, but, you know, in a way, indirectly complaining to God. But it is almost silly for these people to complain to God. Chapter 14, verse 34, God clearly states that for 40 years, 1 year for each of the 40 days you explore the land, you will suffer for your sins and know what it is like to have me against you. So it wasn't the fault of Moses, really. It was God who said 40 years. And he said this clearly and loudly, you know, but these people have forgotten that. And so again, you know, we need to have a correct, before going further into any of the substantial message, we need to have a correct understanding of the time frame here. Otherwise, we're going to not understand why Korah and Dathan's actions were wrong. And with the considerations of the evidence that we have seen the Bible, a lot of time has passed between, you know, few chapters. The fact that chapter 14 talks about Israelites returning back to the wilderness, and after just two chapters, we see Korah rebelling against Moses. So from chapter 14 to chapter 16, we see a rebellion happening. So it can be a bit confusing, so don't think that just because it's only a couple of chapters apart, the time frame is going to be close to each other. That's not going to be the case all the time. Within those two chapters in between, around 35 years have passed. And if we don't have this correct understanding of the time frame, then we might misunderstand Moses' intention by thinking that Moses has misled and deceived his people or failed his people for 40 years. So being oblivious definitely helps us sometimes in our lives. I mean, it's a blessing to be able to forget about stuff. It is good to not remember about, you know, bad memories. You know, you might have had car accidents, or, you know, you might have had, you know, tragic events in your lives. And you don't want to remember that, right? You just don't want to recall any of what had happened. However, one thing that we cannot be oblivious is towards God's words. However, the fact that we forget about certain things comes without much effort. Thus, we need to continue to remind ourselves of His words through constant meditation throughout each and every day. These words are given to us after 3,000 years have passed, because these words still directly affect our lives. And there are a lot of points to take away from them. That is why he tells his people to keep the words close to his people. Especially, you know, he tells the kings and the leaders to keep his words close to him. The words are basically the wisdom here. In Deuteronomy 17, verse 18, he says, "When we take the throne of his kingdom, he is to write for himself on a scroll, a copy of this law, taken from that of the Levitical priest." So thus, as Christians and as children of God, we should not forget about the written history. Because that's wisdom. Who can blame these people, Korah and the others, when we're just looking at the mere facts without taking into any other considerations? They did go through a tough time for you know, 35 years. Can anyone blame them? You know, you thought that God had a plan for you and he sent you to some African country, and 35 years have passed. Are you not going to have any complaints towards God? So no one could really blame them, right? However, we can actually, you know, relate to a lot of things are happening in our lives within the Bible. What I mean by this is that if you think this road that we're on is absolutely the wrong path, then we must not hesitate to turn back. However, if the reason for turning back is because it is inconvenient, is because we're just tired, and is because we just don't want to deal with it, then that reason alone shouldn't be the reason for us to turn back. We should not do whatever we desire, but must stay faithful to God's plans. So what I encourage you to do is actually find the things that are happening in our lives and try to correlate with the stories in the Bible. I'm almost certain that you're able to learn something from it. So basically, if you're on the verge of making a complaint about something and you know that the fault is in you, if you know that you're just, you know, too lazy to keep on going on that path, then try to meditate on the words and try to locate where you are in terms of this religious map, and see what God said to his people to do in order to, you know, be reminded of the things that he have done for you. You know, it might be the case that you might need a restoration of the relationship with him. So it is a very useful tool, and it's there for us to utilize it. So use it. It's the wisdom to how to live in this world. So what is the takeaway point of what the Israelites are doing here? If we don't know the history, the fact that we're the cause of all this happening and that we're all sinners, then our faith will crumble. And also, if our community loses its identity in terms of the goal or the mission given to us by God, then we will also fall in disparity, especially if the leaders fall. And because of this rebellion, because of, you know, the rebellion that has startled because of their lack of faith, 14,700 people were dead because of the, you know, contagious disease. And, you know, such a tragedy when we also know that, you know, 40 years were almost complete and they're about to enter into the land of Canaan. And God will probably not going to use such severe punishment upon us at this time, but be sure of this, he will judge us at the end. And if we don't obey to his commandments and laws, then we will fail, we will fall into disparity, and we will be condemned at the end. So by looking at the chapters from chapters 11 to 16, we're able to see the repetition of these people forgetting about God's heart and His intention. And it is when we do not have a correct understanding of His standards, or forget about the standards, is when we lead ourselves into the wrong path. Our greed and lustful desires will surely fail us at the end. So we need to get in the habit of remembering God's promise and what God has done for us. And just because we didn't, you know, we weren't there at the land of Canaan or on the journey to the land of Canaan, you'll be treated as the same manner of forgetting about His words and His commandments if we, you know, don't read the Bible, if we don't read the numbers that talk about this journey and the very fact that God is telling us or telling His people to not to forget about what He has done for them. You know, we'll be doing exactly the same thing as these people if we don't actually try, or if we don't have the, you know, the behavior or the practice to remembering those things. So in chapter 17 through 19, God takes specific measures to recover the failure done by the Israelites. In chapter 17, God speaks to Moses and the Israelites and tell them to get 12 staffs from them and from the leader of each of their ancestral tribes, and tells them to write the name of each man on his staff, and tells them that the staff belonging to the man he chooses will sprout. And by doing this, God is showing us that it is not just one leader who's doing God's work and leading all the people. God is willing to use whoever will respond to Him with a faithful heart. So in this modern church, you know, it can be pastors or leaders or any of us listening to the sermon today that He, you know, chooses to use. And now God chooses Aaron and encouraged him and his people to be the models of Christians. So what we need to remember from this this part of the story is that, you know, it's not about the person, it's not about the pastor, it's not about Aaron, you know, the chosen people. It's not about them. It's about, you know, about staying faithful to His words and about staying true to His words by, you know, unconditionally believing in Him and living according to His standards and according to His plan. And when we do that, as we live in this world, He will surely bless us and He will use us and He will lead us into the path of, you know, the land of Canaan, the promised land. So the priests of Levites, when they were entering into the land of Canaan, they were supported by the tent that were given to God, right? So basically, like the offerings that we give each month based on the income that we have, they're able to live off of that. And what we can realize from that is the importance of this, of giving the tent. It's basically saying, God, even though, you know, we don't have things that are for certain, such as the land itself, because they were in the wilderness, by giving the tent, they're basically saying that, God, we're committed to You and that we believe in Your words. And many times we misunderstand the, you know, the giving of the tent as an offering, because, you know, God pretty much gave us the free will to make this kind of offering. Even though He gave us the free will, because He gave us the commandments and the rules, we know what we need to do with this tent. And without really understanding, you know, without having a correct understanding, proper understanding of the commandments and the of God's rules, we're gonna have different interpretations in terms of how to give this offering, to how to give this tent. But if we have that proper understanding, then we know what we need to do with it. So although you have this free will to do whatever you want, you have to kind of, you know, if you understand the commandments and the rules, then you have to make, you have to act freely within that boundary. You can't go over that boundary. But many of us these days, you know, we don't really give a lot of meaning or a lot of, you know, we don't really put standards on how to give this tenth. So don't try so hard to wrap up the sermon. Don't try so hard to bear the fruits. What I mean by that is, what's more important is to actually know the truth of God and to live faith or to live truthful to His words. And when we do that, the fruits will bear itself and the fruits will follow. And let the purpose or the angle of our faith and goal of our faith not be about being healed or to be blessed, but rather let it be about genuinely trying to live faithfully under His plan. And when we do that, we will be healed and we will be blessed. Those things will follow. So, you know, let us not be deceived by the, you know, a lot of the events that are happening at church, you know, to make you feel like you're bearing fruits or to make you feel like you're being healed. You know, those events that they have where they, you know, they call it the healing prayer time, or, you know, the time where we get together to bear fruits or something like that. Those things could definitely help, but many times the sole purpose, that shouldn't be the sole purpose of worshiping God. Our sole duty is to, you know, live joyously according to His plan and actually find joy within His plan. And when we truly find joy within His plan is when we can actually go out to evangelize to others, to spread the gospel of His. Because if we're not happy, if we're not enjoying our lives under His plan, then we're not going to be motivated to you know, spread His words. So that should be our first priority. So furthermore, in chapters 18 and 19, God continues to talk about the ways for His people to live as holy figures. So to wrap things up, let us not, you know, forget about the purpose that He has given to us. Let us not forget about His heart and His intention at the beginning of the journey. And if we're lost, remember that we have to go back and restore our relationship with Him. And, you know, even though we might have complaints in our lives, even though we might be in the wilderness for the next 40 years, even though we see the land of Canaan right in front of our eyes, we need to find joy even in those tough 40 years. So we need to ask Him to encourage us to, you know, be faithful to His words and continue to have the motivation to meditate on His words so that we can be happy within His words and we can be the true followers of Jesus Christ. So let us make that commitment today and let that be our testimony throughout, you know, from the beginning of this month of April.